just after 8 minutes past seven. It's time for It Says in the Papers with Caroline Murphy.
Give me the moolah. That's the headline in the Irish Independent today, as that paper brings us a few more lines from 2008 banker chat. We'll be going down there with our arms swinging, is what we're told. David Drum told John Bowe was the plan for the central bank. I'm very clear on the proposal, we're told, he said. I'm going to keep asking the thick question, when? When is the cheque arriving? We need the moolah, he said he would say. We need the moolah. You have it, so you're going to give it to us. And when would that be? We'll start there. There's more. We're told he said he'd be threatening regulators unless they wrote him a cheque. He said he'd tell them, if you want the keys now, you can have them. So I'm relaxed about it. And he also said that he would lose the plot with the regulator if he didn't get his way. As Lise Hand says of it all on page four, it's an unreal world. This latest tape reveals just to what extent Anglo-Irish Bank had morphed into a movie plot featuring a cast of pumped-up, not-so-wise guys scheming how to relieve the central bank of a large amount of loot. It's a hollowly fitting tribute to actor James Gandolfini, she says, for some exchanges could have been lifted straight from a script from The Sopranos. The contempt for the country's top banking officials oozes from every sentence, she continues. These guys revel in the language of the street, in sticking it to the main man. There's plenty more, of course, in the comment pages. Martina Devlin writes under the headline, Banking's boorish alpha male culture has to be dismantled, while Dervil MacDonald's piece is headlined, Absence of Women Fueled Gordon Gekko Greed is Good Culture. But from what was going on at Anglo in 2008 to what's going on in other banks today, both The Examiner and The Irish Times lead with stories this morning on how mortgage holders in difficulty are to be dealt with. Family homes to be seized from October is the headline in The Examiner. John Walsh says the new code of conduct is being released by the central bank today and that it will come into effect on July the 1st. The Times leads with the new code too. Conor Pope says that under it, banks will not be able to force distressed borrowers off tracker mortgages unless they engage in meaningful write-downs or provide alternative arrangements of real benefit to those in arrears. And he tells us the central bank has said the code, published this morning, will not allow the state's lenders to fast-track home repossessions. The state's response to those who spend time in Magdalen laundries gets attention this morning. State to finally compensate women it ignored for decades, says the headline on the front of The Examiner. Well, The Times has three different pieces on page four. Reports on the responses of the women and of the religious orders involved, and an analysis piece by Patsy McGarry headlined, Promise of Ongoing Care Most Valuable to Magdalen Survivors. But finally this morning, to that 94 million Euromillion winner. The ticket was sold in Dublin, says the piece on the front of The Examiner. It'll take a week for the loot to arrive from the other Euromillion countries, says the lead in the Irish Daily Star. While the editorial in The Independent says simply, we wish Ireland's newest multimillionaire long life, health and happiness. And it concludes, we wish the same to their family and to their doubtless rapidly growing band of friends.
From now, though, let's get the business headlines from Emma McNamara.
Thanks, Rachel. Overnight, European Union finance ministers agreed on a plan to rescue troubled banks without leaving taxpayers with the bill. And as we heard on the news bulletin, it will see the bank's creditors and shareholders take the first hits and then savers with more than €100,000. After that, government help could be called on and taxpayers would be among the last to shoulder losses, having already had to pay for a series of bank rescues in recent years. Ireland's finance minister Michael Noonan chaired the talks and he said that the new plan aimed to establish clarity on who paid to rescue ailing banks. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards have signed up with BMG in a move that will see the German music publisher represent their interests in the Rolling Stones catalogue dating back to the 1960s. The signing, which comes as the Rolling Stones celebrate 50-year anniversary of the release of the first single in June 1963, marks the first deal that the Rolling Stones pair have signed in 30 years following their contract with EMI Music Publishing in 1983. Irish payment technology company 3V and Finnish mobile company DNA have struck a deal which will allow mobile payment by smartphone and on the internet. DNA Tapica is like a virtual payment card that works like a wallet app on Windows, iOS and Android platforms. DNA has 2.4 million mobile subscribers. And meanwhile, PayPal says it's going to launch interplanetary payments, a system for buying things in space. PayPal wants to get into the new field of space tourism, and with companies like Virgin Galactic and SpaceX bringing space tourism closer, PayPal says it's looking at the complicated issues of space commerce. PayPal President David Marcus told CNN, "We don't have all the answers right now, but it's clear we won't be using cash when we're in space. We feel it's time now, not next year and not when space tourism starts to happen, to start figuring out what this looks like." And as we heard in the news bulletin, about 90 jobs are to be created in Dublin by IDA-supported so-called fast-growing companies. They're Adara Global, eMaint, Premier and games developer Nordeus. And on the currency markets this morning, the euro is trading at $1.30.27 and at 84.97 pence sterling.
If you're one of the tens of thousands of people whose mortgage is in arrears, there's news for you this morning. The central bank has changed the rules governing how the banks deal with those who've fallen behind on mortgage payments. The new code of conduct will come into place next week. Our economics correspondent Sean Whelan can bring us through the changes. Sean, first of all, why has the central bank decided that it's time to change tack?
Well, what the central bank is trying to do is to get the banks to move to address the mortgage arrears problem. We know there's about 12.5% of mortgages, about 95,500 outstanding mortgages that are in arrears of more than 3 months. And beyond 3 months is the period really when you have to start dealing with them. And they haven't been dealing with them. There's thousands of mortgages that have more than 2 years of arrears on them. They're just sitting there. They're a drain on the banks. They're causing them problems. Until that situation is addressed, the banks are not ever going to become profitable and they're not going to get back to normal lending. So they want the banks to start moving on this problem. It's built up. It's 5 years since the start of the financial crisis. Something has to be done, and they want the banks to get on with doing it. They also want members of the public to start doing deals with their banks. Really what they want the banks to start doing is to start cutting deals to make people sustainable in their mortgages, and then find those who are absolutely not sustainable under any circumstances, and at that point they would move to repossess the properties. Banks have been saying it's too hard to repossess properties. The current code doesn't allow us start moving on them. It takes too long. It restricts the amount of contacts that we can make with people. So the bank, central bank, have made some changes to those rules and regulations.
So for those people who are in difficulties at the moment, and as you were saying there, we're talking about more than 95,000 mortgages where people are in arrears of at least 3 months. What will be the main change that those people notice?
Main change relates, I suppose the first change relates to the amount of contacts that banks can make to people. We heard very early on that people were getting a lot of phone calls from banks, were being harassed by them. So the central bank stepped in and said, no, you can only contact people, make three contacts per month with people. And after that, you can't keep on and on at them. Now they're lifting the number of the restrictions. So the bank can make any number that it deems appropriate. But the central bank says you can't harass people and you can't keep on and on, and you have to give them reasonable time to respond. If you, the bank, ask them to do something, you must give them reasonable time to respond.
Who have you been talking to?
Bernard Sheridan, who's in charge of this now at the central bank, is the guy in charge of these mortgage regulations, which are legally binding on the banks. And he has been telling us about the changes to the contacts regime and why they're doing it.
Generally, what we have found is for people who are cooperating, the lender agrees future contact. For those that are not cooperating, that means there's no engagement. It's very difficult in that scenario for actually an arrangement to actually be agreed. The code actually requires lenders to proactively engage and make contact with the borrowers. We have a limit, and we had a limit of three contacts per month. And we feel that actually may be inhibiting lenders actually making contact and maintaining the contact that's necessary in order to deliver the solutions. While we're changing that, we're including additional protections, which is basically saying that lenders cannot harass borrowers. If they actually make contact and the borrower agrees to provide information or carry out some action, that they must be given sufficient time to do that before any further engagement actually happens.
And have you been checking how the banks have been doing these kind of contacts?
So we have been out doing inspections of the various lenders. We've been listening in on hundreds of calls, checking the nature of the engagement and whether it is harassment or whether actually they're trying to proactively work for a solution. And we have actually found a high level of compliance. Obviously, we've come across one or two smaller issues, but there's generally been a high level of compliance with our requirements.
Bernard Sheridan there of the Central Bank. Sean, what else is likely to change?
The other big change is the period in which the banks can move to repossess. We've had this 12-month standstill period up until now, but the Central Bank consider that really what people need is a time to think at the end of the process rather than at the start of the process. So what they've done now is say there has to be a 3-month notice period if they're going to repossess on somebody. If for new arrears cases, that is, if you go into arrears from next week onwards, it becomes an 8-month period because they have to work through a 5-month process of dealing with your mortgage, trying to find a suitable solution for you. And then if there is no suitable solution for you, then the bank wants to move to repossess, then they must give you this 3-month period. So there's a sort of an 8-month minimum period. That assumes, of course, that the banks are super efficient and can actually process all these thousands and thousands of cases within a few months. And remember, they've got to issue something like 25,000 offers to people in mortgage distress by Sunday evening under the directions that were issued to the central bank. So the banks are under very severe pressure to start cracking deals, and we've seen very little evidence that they are cracking deals with people. So the central bank is going to have to come back to them on this. But the notice period is one of the big changes in this, as we heard also from Bernard Sheridan.
If you're not cooperating and you're deemed as such to be a not cooperating borrower, there's actually no time frame. The lender can commence legal proceedings straight away, and that remains the position in the new code. If you're a cooperating borrower, we're moving from this 12-month moratorium that was in place, which actually was a time period in which the process of trying to come up an arrangement was deemed appropriate. And our focus has shifted to the end of the process, where an arrangement is either offered or there's no arrangement offered. How much time should a person have to consider the scenario, the situation, and what they might do? And we've concluded that that period should be 3 months at the end of the process. So, for example, a person may consider availing of one of the new arrangements under the insolvency service when that's up and running. They need time to actually consider that and work that through. So we've concluded on a 3-month period for that. However, we also want to protect people who are just in new arrears or in early arrears. So we've set a minimum time period from when they go into arrears to when the lender can actually commence legal proceedings. And that time period we've set at 8 months. So even if you're in early arrears, you know actually that the legal proceedings will not be able to commence for a period of 8 months.
Sean, we heard Bernard Sheridan stressing again there that really they see two distinct groups here, people who are cooperating with their bank or their lender and people who aren't.
That's right. And that's really important. The people who cooperate are the ones who are in contact with the bank. So if the bank phones you up, you talk to them and you say, yeah, I want to try and do something with this. You're a cooperating lender or a cooperating borrower, and you are protected by the code of conduct. But if you just don't take the calls, you hide from the bank, you don't answer the letters, you don't have any contact with them, they can just deem you to be a non-cooperative and they can immediately move to repossess. The only change in this is that they have to give you 20 days notice in writing saying we're going to deem you non-cooperative. It's a very serious step, so people really should talk to the bank and deal with them and get into the process, because the consequences can become quite severe quite quickly.
And just briefly, Sean, the question of tracker mortgages. There's been a lot of speculation about just how desperate the banks are to get rid of these mortgages and what they might do to people who hold them and who do fall into arrears. What's the story there?
The banks say they're losing massive amounts of money on the trackers. They'd love to get rid of them as best they can. They're not allowed to get rid of them. There is a change in this code of conduct saying that if the bank has worked through every possible solution and they have to prove it in writing to the central bank, they can, in the final analysis, if it's a choice between the person keeping their house in a restructured mortgage or not keeping it at all, they can offer them a proposal that means removing the tracker mortgage from them. But the central bank would expect something big for the punter. Mortgage broker, say, you should be looking for something like a 25% write down in the principal sum in exchange for giving up your tracker.
As we heard in the bulletin, three people, including two Irish women, have been found shot dead in an apartment on the Costa del Sol. Our reporter, Justin McCarthy, has been trying to find out more. What's known, Justin, about what happened?
Well, Cathal, this all happened in an apartment in Mijas, which is on the Costa del Sol, as you said, in the south of Spain. It's a popular area with tourists and expats. And this is the story of a family of three who had been living in Spain for the past number of years, around a decade. And they were found dead by the owner of the villa, who went there yesterday to check about rent money, which was owed to him. The villa is a four-bedroom, three-storey property with a swimming pool in quite a nice area. And when he couldn't contact the occupants, he went inside and he found a man in his 50s dead on the sofa, and a woman also in her 50s, and her daughter dead in a nearby bedroom. The daughter was in her 20s. The owner then made contact with Spanish police, who've since sealed off the property with police tape and have launched an investigation.
Are the Department of Foreign Affairs involved?
Yes, the Department of Foreign Affairs has confirmed that the woman who was in her 50s and her daughter were Irish passport holders, and the department are liaising with the Spanish authorities to try and make contact with the relatives of those two women to inform them about what happened. The department has also said that the man who was found dead was a British national. Spanish police are also trying to find out what happened here. Neighbours in the area say that they heard gunshots a few days prior to the discovery yesterday, and police believe the family there may have been dead for several days before their bodies were actually found.
Does it look like the police have a pretty good idea what happened?
Well, there's no information yet, Cathal, about whether or not there was a weapon found at the scene, but police have confirmed that they're not looking for anybody else in relation to this tragic case, so it looks like that they are following a definite line of inquiry here.
Joe will be relieved to hear the latest Anglo tapes in the Irish Independent this morning do not include any more rude remarks about Germans as he attends the EU summit starting today in Brussels. We talked to Paul Williams about the tapes later on, but we're going to talk now to Paul Cunningham in Brussels about the summit and some of the meetings which will be taking place in advance of that summit in Brussels. Paul, first of all, what's the agenda for the day, and what are the apart from the tapes, what are the obvious matters arising?
Yeah, well, the big issues are finance. That's what's going to be coming up for EU leaders. They've got lots of plans, lots of difficult issues, but things are a little bit more complicated for Enda Kenny, because what we're finding out today is just the exercise of German power and a question about Ireland's ability to resist. And this relates to, the backstory is basically a long plan to agree a cut in car emissions. And a tentative deal was done with the European Parliament on Monday. And the Environment Minister, Phil Hogan, said a deal would be done today. Indeed, in a statement, he said that this clearly is a deal which represents a win-win for the climate, consumers, innovation and jobs. But what we've heard from EU sources is that tremendous pressure has been applied in Ireland not to push this deal through at a meeting this morning, and that contact was made at the highest possible level. In other words, Chancellor Angela Merkel spoke to Enda Kenny and expressed Berlin's clear desire for this plan, which Ireland had been stewarding for 6 months through its EU presidency, not to go through. And it would appear from two EU sources from different institutions that that's what's going to happen. As you say, the backdrop to this week is Anglo-Ireland or Anglo-Irish Bank. Terrible things being said about Germany. Germany being upset about this happening. And the question is, could this have anything to do with Ireland's ability not to push through this deal on car emissions, because Germany happens to be displeased?
So we have something we're worried about for obvious reasons, the effect of the Anglo tapes on our desire to get our banks sorted and get European and German backing insofar as that's possible for some measure of retrospective assistance. And the Germans have a problem. Is there informally acknowledged or not the possibility of them scratching our back and us perhaps agreeing to scratch theirs?
Well, there's no suggestion whatsoever that this was raised by Angela Merkel yesterday. I think it's more a question of Ireland's ability to stand up and say no when you feel you're on the back foot. Both the Taoiseach and the Minister for Finance in the past couple of days, they've come to Brussels, they've come to Luxembourg, and the questions have come back again about Anglo-Irish Bank and what does this mean for Ireland's relationship with Germany? And all of them have said that it hasn't been mentioned by their colleagues, but clearly it's something they want to go away as quickly as possible. It was put to Michael Noonan that this was not what he wanted when he was trying to do a deal on banking union to Eamon Gilmore about this difficulty in trying to get its EU budget. So it's cast a dark shadow over everything that Ireland is doing in the last week of its presidency when these big issues are coming through.
So where are they? I mean, is that one of the big topics for the summit? Where are they on banking regulation, on banking supervision and on banking union generally? Or is there anything else major on the agenda?
Well, I think they'll be absolutely delighted that Michael Noonan has managed to steer through a deal on banking resolution. It's a key part of banking union. It's something that they've wanted to achieve. And so there'll be massive relief that that deal has finally been done. They've been talking, when it comes to the upcoming summit, it's far more about planning for the future, planning for creating jobs, trying to get their fiscal policies harmonised. If they're able to have a deal on the budget, which is discussions ongoing as we speak, that would be another big coup for the Irish presidency and take some of the pressure off the EU leaders, because it's very difficult to plan if you haven't got a budget. So that's something they'll hope will happen over the next couple of hours, which will allow them to focus more on the long term.
I'm sure it's not just people who are unemployed who'll be a little worried perhaps about that good news on jobs you may have heard about on the programme earlier. 90 jobs in a number of high-tech companies are of course welcome, but against a backdrop of 400,000 plus people being unemployed, it's a reminder of what a very, very long way we have to go. Now, today the Minister for Enterprise, Richard Bruton, will be setting up a new Government Entrepreneurship Forum. He's in our AA Roadwatch studio in Dublin City Centre to tell us more. Minister, good morning.
Hi, Cathal, how are you?
Well, thank you. Now, this forum will be doing what?
Well, this forum, I suppose, well, first of all, just to deal with the first point you made there, I think it's important to point out that we are, you know, the private sector is now creating 2,000 jobs per month. That's a dramatic improvement in where we were losing 7,000 jobs per month just 3 years ago. But you're absolutely right. We've a long way to go. And one of the areas is entrepreneurship. About 2/3 of all jobs created come from companies in their first 5 years of operation. So what we're doing with this group is we're tapping into international experience and people who've done it, like Sean O'Sullivan, entrepreneurs who've actually done it, to say how can we lift the standards, the supports to business startups in Ireland and entrepreneurship. We have a reasonable level of entrepreneurship. It's improved a lot for women in the last couple of years, but there's a long way to go. And I think what we want to do here is generate a strategy and a series of actions that we can deliver in 2014, 2015 and beyond.
Yeah, the names of the people on the forum are interesting. Sean O'Sullivan, obviously you think of Dragon's Den. And in fact, it almost looks like an ideal panel for Dragon's Den. Joe Cunningham, inventor of the SMS message. Noel O'Connor, entrepreneur behind Tan Organic. Tom Coe, of Coe's Crisps. Ray Nolan, software entrepreneur, including Worky.com, and a couple of other people as well. But I mean, you expect that they're all excellent and very, very bright people. But what can they do to create jobs or to encourage you or encourage other people to do what they've done?
Well, I think they can highlight the sort of obstacles that they encountered and to show us how we remove them and look at international best practice. I mean, this starts at your education system and the extent to which entrepreneurship is supported there. It then moves into how easy is it to raise finance? Are the points of access to finance easily accessible? What sort of mentoring support is available through what they call the valley of death, when a company, a new startup, is at really vulnerable to falling on its face because of perhaps just lack of experience? How do you internationalise that company to go from the familiar market to breaking out into a new market? How do you build the contacts in those new markets? It's people who've done that, who've been through the pitfalls, who can really set us on the right track. We've a lot of really good programs out there, but what we need to make sure is that they're attuned to the needs of someone who is going to be obsessed with their idea and maybe doesn't have the time to access or to understand what supports are out there for them. So it's to bring that together in a coherent strategy that will help us improve our rating. And if you look at what the Dutch did in recent years, they had lower rates of entrepreneurship than we did, and now they're substantially nearly 50% higher than we are. And they did that by a strategy that sought to plug all those different holes in the system.
Can we talk about her international image and how it's been affected by the Anglo tapes? Another one, as I say, we'll be talking about later in The Independent this morning. The novelist Peter Cunningham is writing in the Financial Times this morning. He's described what has happened as a dark, cruel comedy at the expense of the Irish taxpayer, which is not the kind of thing I was. We know there were worse. There was much worse in the German papers yesterday. How can we, and it's in a country where nobody's been prosecuted or convicted yet, there's been no investigation. We're still talking about the form of a parliamentary investigation 5 years on. How can you get over the damage that what happened has done and how it's been handled is still doing, I suggest?
Yeah, well, I think like anyone else, I was seething with anger to hear those tapes. And they do damage to our international reputation. But I think, you know, people also understand that this is 5 years ago. They also understand that there has been a detailed investigation by the Gardaí and the Office of Corporate Enforcement, that the DPP has brought, you know, 60 charges, criminal charges against three individuals, and that trials are going to proceed. So I think there is, while absolutely there is an anger and frustration here, there is a process of, you know, pursuing these cases. I think the second dimension of that is, as you say, I think people want to know why did the protections of policy, of regulation that they thought would they could rely on, why were they breached so dramatically? Why was it so easy to apparently dupe, you know, the regulatory system, the policy system? And I think, you know, we need to see that investigated.
Sure. Wouldn't it be easier for you as a minister meeting, I know we've been talking about domestic entrepreneurs earlier, but in meeting the kind of people who want to invest in Ireland, wouldn't it be a lot easier for you to be, if you were able to say to them, look how many people have been convicted already. You can't even point to one. And I'm just wondering, are you frustrated by how long it has taken to get to the stage where we get results?
I mean, of course, everyone is frustrated that investigation of complex criminal cases takes so long. But equally, you know, I understand fully the independence of that investigative system, of the prosecution system, and that you won't get, you know, cases that will stand up if politicians try to interfere in that process. And that, you know, we have a separation of powers for very good reason. And we've seen in the past how politicians made comments that resulted in criminal trials being aborted because, if you like, the case had been prejudiced by political comment. So, you know, I understand the anger, but I also understand, you know, the proper limits of the role of a politician compared to the role of people who are charged with investigation and prosecution. And I think that has to be, you know, underlined. And I think people need to be reassured that, you know, every resource was put in to make sure that this investigation could be completed properly.
Even though the DPP's funding was cut?
Well, I think what has happened is additional resources were put into the Garda and the investigative resources. The OECD was beefed up with Garda expertise. New Act was passed by Alan Shatter, which gave new powers to allow the investigation to proceed more successfully. You know, so there was everything was done to make sure that no obstacle would stand in the way of investigating.
But the DPP's funding was cut.
Well, the DPP, you know, has files and has the capacity to prosecute cases. I mean, every agency in the country. I mean, my department has seen 15% reduction in its staffing levels because, you know, the country we live in. But, you know, we still have to get on with delivering, and this is an absolute priority.
All right, Minister, sorry, there we must leave it. Minister for Enterprise, Jobs and Innovation, Richard Bruton, thank you.
We're going to return briefly now to that news that an Irish woman, her husband and daughter have been found shot dead at their house in the resort of Mijas in southern Spain. Tom Borish, a BBC correspondent, is in the area. He's been telling me about what's known to have happened.
Neighbours have told journalists at the scene yesterday that they heard gunshots possibly 3 days ago. Possibly three gunshots. Of course, police later discovered three bodies in this villa. We've been up to the villa. It's in the resort where we are now, Cala de Mijas, which is near Malaga, near Marbella, down on the Costa del Sol here in Spain. Obviously, as you'd expect, the villa's got police tape around the main entrance, and almost sort of eerily, there is a shopping trolley still parked outside the main door. The main line of inquiry for police, given all the reports we have, is, I think, that this is tragically a suicide murder.
What's known about the three people who lived in this villa? Had they been in the area for very long?
Well, neighbours say they had, that they were living in this part of Spain. I mean, the resort is a fairly affluent area. The villa itself, from the outside, looks pretty big. And there are lots of medium to big-sized villas in this area, as well as apartments, very popular with European expats. We know, of course, that the woman who died was Irish, she was in her 50s, according to the Irish government, and her daughter was in her 20s. Now, there's lots of reports that her daughter was mentally disabled. Some reports in the Spanish press, although unconfirmed, I think, it's important to stress that the woman was physically disabled. One report coming from journalists at the scene yesterday, speaking to one neighbour who said they believe that the family did have some type of financial trouble.
Officially, what have the police been saying about what happened?
Well, the Spanish police have given relatively little detail, apart from the fact that they found the bodies of three foreign nationals. The Irish government and the British, and information coming from the British government, have since confirmed that they were two Irish nationals and one British national, that being a man. The British Foreign and Commonwealth Office has released a statement saying that they are aware of a tragic incident and they're providing consular assistance to those involved. And so the Spanish police are expected to give more information this morning.
It's 25 to 8. Des Cahill is here with the sport.
Yeah, and a busy morning, Rachel. Starting with rugby, Lions coach Warren Gatland surprisingly makes 5 changes to his starting team for Saturday's second test against Australia in Melbourne. Irish winger Tommy Bowe comes in for Alex Cuthbert. Scrum half Ben Youngs replaces Mike Phillips. They're the changes in the back line. There are 2 forced changes in the pack, with Vunipola coming in at loosehead prop for Corbusiero, and Jeff Parling replacing the injured Paul O'Connell. And the other change is loose forward Dan Lydiott replacing Tom Croft. Both Sean O'Brien and Conor Murray have been added to the bench. Australia retained James O'Connor at fly half, and they've selected Kirtley Beale at full back for the game. And perhaps the biggest talking point is the omission of scrum half Mike Phillips. Gatland confirmed he is not injured.
Oh, no, I think Mike was fit, available, but he's had problems at the knee. It's been sore. He hasn't been able to take a full part in training, and the decision was to rest him for this week. He's potentially an important component for next week, so we wanted to make sure that, you know, just given the quality of the nines that we've got, I mean, all of them have done a great job so far, and we felt that was prudent to make sure that he was 100% fit next week by just making sure we just give him a few days off his feet.
Now, Wimbledon insist that their courts are in good nick, but the players don't agree. It follows a day when no less than 7 players withdrew because of injury. No shortage of upsets either, with former winners in both the men's and women's singles suffering defeat. The big shock of the day, defending champion Roger Federer lost to world number 116, Sergei Stakhovsky, in 4 sets. Maria Sharapova was also beaten. She lost to number 131 in the world, Michelle Larcher de Brito, in court number 2. Now to golf, and the Irish Open has just gotten underway at Carton House, with all of Ireland's top golfers eager for victory. Reporting is Greg Allen.
Rory McIlroy tees off shortly in his first event since he finished outside the top 40 in the US Open a couple of weeks ago. That performance was typical of a mediocre season by his high standards. And most recently, of course, he's had just 1 top 10 finish since early April. So he's obviously this week hoping for a bit of a turnaround, much in the same way as the Irish Open last year began a revival from a similar slump in form and helped kickstart that late season rush of extraordinary play when winning just seemed so easy for him. McIlroy yesterday said he's hopeful that a 3-hour conversation which he had over dinner at the US Open 12 days ago with his father Jerry and coach Michael Bannon may just turn out to be the key to injecting some success in the season. And yesterday he spoke about what he took out of that round table summit on what's been ailing his form in 2013.
Just different thoughts and different feelings of where my game has been in the past, what I was doing, you know, different swing thoughts that I had at different times, and you know, I've started to keep a little diary on stuff like that, and anything that pops up into my head, I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to just keep a little book of thoughts and notes, and you know, something that I think is a good idea. And you know, I think that dinner, you know, that Saturday night in Marion's going to be very helpful for the rest of the year.
And the equipment issue is comes up again and again. Do you find that's frustrating as a question to be asked to you, as I'm asking it you now?
No, not really, because I mean, I know that that's not an issue at all. So you know, that's something I'm happy to answer, because I know that's definitely nothing to do with the clubs. It's all me.
So McIlroy is out with his pal Shane Lowry at 10-8, while at 10-1 in the other marquee grouping, world number 9 Graham McDowell tees off with Paddy Carrington and last year's winner from Wales, Jamie Donaldson.
All right, thanks, Greg. In Gaelic games, it'll be Wexford and Kilkenny in the Leinster under 21 hurling final. Wexford beat Carlow by 112 to 9 points. Kilkenny beat Offaly by 119 to 113. Couple of the prizes in Munster minor hurling. All-Ireland champions Tipperary beaten in Thurles by Limerick, who will now be seeking a Munster hurling double on July the 14th. Limerick won by 117 to 17 points. Limerick would meet Waterford in the final. They had an excellent win in Cork, winning by 319 to 120 after extra time. Kildare won the Leinster Junior Football title, beating Longford 215 to 38. Brazil reached the Confederations Cup final. They beat Uruguay 2-1 last night. Spain and Italy meet in the second of the semi-finals tonight. Carlos Tevez has completed his move from Manchester City to Italian champions Juventus. And in racing, a surprise at Nace as Aidan O'Brien's Moth was beaten by stablemate Venus de Milo. One leg of a 63-1 treble for O'Brien, who also won with Illustrate and Darwin. This evening's racing is at Tipperary.
Let's get the business from Emma.
Thanks, Rachel. As we've been hearing overnight, European Union finance ministers agreed on a plan to rescue troubled banks without leaving taxpayers with the bill. It will see the bank's creditors and shareholders take the first hits, and then savers with more than €100,000. On this and more, we're joined in studio by markets analyst Paul Somerville of Somerville Advisory Markets. Paul, how much of a change of this is this, and do you think it really will leave taxpayers without the bill?
Yeah, morning, Emma. Very much like everything that comes out of the EU, in principle it sounds very good, but in practice I don't think it's going to work. The main reason for that is the politicians have decided that they want to try and break the sovereign from the banks, which of course in Ireland we all know is a very good idea, and we should have done that many years ago. The main problem here is, if a bank in Europe is going to fail in the next couple of years, why is it going to fail? And it's going to fail because of the holdings of sovereign bonds that they've got. The ECB has told banks around the world to load up on sovereign bonds. So while the politicians are saying they're breaking the sovereign from the banks, they're not at all, because on one side you've got the ECB telling banks to buy sovereigns. If there's a problem with a bank, it's going to be in the sovereign bond market, and the banks will be able to say to the sovereigns and to the ECB, it's all your fault. So in practice, I don't think it's going to work.
And speaking of countries' finances, the markets, the US stocks rose sharply yesterday as investors thought the weak GDP reading for the US would keep the Fed stimulus going, will it?
Yeah, I mean, the volatility in the market has really sharpened since last Wednesday, since Mr. Bernanke talked about tapering. So we had some serious falls all across Europe in late last week. But because it's the end of the half year, we have had some buying yesterday and today, this morning in Asia, and I would expect that to continue this afternoon. But the GDP numbers in the USA, absolutely dismal. Came out yesterday at 1.8%. And when you think we've had 4 years of quantitative easing, they've put trillions and trillions of dollars into their economy, and the economy can grow only at 1.8%. Absolutely shocking. But of course, the financial markets take it in a very perverse way, and that's why they bought stocks yesterday, because they're basically saying Ben Bernanke won't be able to switch off the heroin tap.
And any sign of these feral hogs of the markets we were warned about earlier this week by Dallas Fed's Robert Fisher?
Well, again, I think you're going to see more of them next week rather than the end of this week, because what you'll see is a lot of hedge funds squaring up the books now in the next 24 hours. So I would expect the markets to be relatively quiet for the next 48 hours. But again, I would expect then the volatility to increase again and be there for the next couple of months and for the summer.
OK, Paul Somerville, thanks very much for joining us in studio this morning. And while PayPal is looking at the issue of paying for things in space, Irish company 3V has struck a deal with Finnish mobile operator DNA to allow mobile payment by smartphone and on the internet. For more on this, we're joined by 3V's Kieran Guilfoyle. Kieran, how does it work?
Yeah, hi, good morning, Emma. Yeah, so 3V are a Irish payments company. We design, build and develop payment systems. People will know us in Ireland for the O2 money deployment. So we've built a smartphone-based payments platform for DNA in Finland. As you said, they're the second largest mobile operator up there with 2.5 million customers. And in essence, the system will allow people to create instantly a Visa debit account on their smartphone, and then they'll be able to use it online or in-store using NFC technology. And also be able to send money instantly to anybody anywhere else in the
world. When will this be a reality, and do you have any similar plans for the Irish market?
It will be launched in Finland in Q4, and in terms of the Irish market, yes, we are looking at developing similar systems.
Okay, Kieran Guilfoyle, thanks very much for joining us this morning. That's Kieran Guilfoyle of 3V. On the currency markets this morning, the euro is trading at $1.30.27 and at 84.97 pence sterling.
Time for weather forecast from Vincent O'Shea at Met Air. And morning, Vincent.
Thank you and good morning, Rachel. Most places will stay cloudy today. Outbreaks of rain will affect parts of North Connacht, Ulster and Leinster, mainly during the forenoon, but otherwise it'll be dry. Warm, sunny spells will develop in the south this afternoon. Highs, temperatures 17 to 22 degrees. It'll be warmest in South Munster. Tonight will be cloudy but dry everywhere with light winds. It'll be very mild and humid, lowest temperatures 10 to 12 degrees. Tomorrow, Friday, will be mostly cloudy again. The south and east will be dry in the morning with a few sunny breaks, but drizzle or light rain in the northwest will spread further south and east in the afternoon, though amounts will be very small. Westerly breezes will be light, highest temperatures 18 to 21 degrees. And the outlook, Saturday will be a warm and a dry day. There'll be pleasant sunny spells across the Midlands, the south and east, but it will be cloudier in the northwest with a little light rain there. Southwest winds will be light, temperatures in the high teens. Sunday will be mostly cloudy again, though mild, with most places dry. However, a few spots of light rain may occur again, mainly in the northwest. Southwest winds will be moderate. Any sunny breaks will be best in the far south. And the further outlook is for the mostly dry, very mild weather to continue up to the middle of next week at least. It will be cloudy overall, though, especially across the north and west, where outbreaks of rain will occur at times. However, amounts of rain will be small and Munster and Leinster will stay mostly dry with some warm sunshine at times. The winds, mainly from the southwest, will be no more than moderate. Temperatures will get into the low 20s in many areas away from coasts. Finally, I'll leave you with a recap on today. Most areas cloudy with some patchy rain in the north and east, otherwise dry with the best sunshine in the south. That's the forecast. Good morning.